Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up on the show, the man behind the music. I mean, this music, the Soundcheck theme song that we play at the start of every show. It's called Eagle Rock, and it was written by Marco Benevento, a keyboardist and pianist known for his hypnotic instrumental work. Well, Marco has a new album out, and on it, he's trying something different. He's singing. He'll join us with his band later on the show. Now, speaking of trying new things, Soundcheck is throwing our first ever Halloween party the day before Halloween, October 30th, in the Green Space. Our special guest is the sorta alternative, sorta prog rock band Primus. Yes, Les Claypool and his band will join us to play songs from Primus and the Chocolate Factory, a new album inspired by the 1971 film adaptation of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. You can get your tickets for this special afternoon event at wnyc.org/thegreenspace, and you're encouraged to wear a Willy Wonka-inspired costume. Now here's a sneak peek of that new album. This is Primus's version of a song that Gene Wilder made famous back in 1971, Pure Imagination.
Come with me and you'll be in a world of imagination. Take a look and you'll see
into your imagination.
Pure Imagination, originally heard on the soundtrack of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and now given a typically strange spin by Primus. Join Soundcheck and Primus for a special afternoon show in the Green Space, October 30th at 1 p.m. Get your tickets at wnyc.org/thegreenspace. Okay, now on with the show. Here at Soundcheck, we've been known to celebrate the anniversary of great albums, and today we mark the 10th anniversary of an album that I wouldn't call great. I mean, it's not bad, but this 2004 record did not make any of those best album of the decade lists. Here, let me play a little bit for you. It starts innocently enough with a little instrumental intro.
I have saved the world in movies. So naturally, there's folks who think I must know what to do.
Now you may be thinking, well, he's not really singing, is he? Or you may be saying, hey, I know that voice. That's Captain Kirk. That's m***ing William Shatner.
Then you.
And while there's a part of me and that guy you've seen.
And then you say to yourself, that's m***ing Brad Paisley. He sings with Shatner? And so does Henry Rollins and Amy Mann. What unholy alliance is this? Well, it's the handiwork of Ben Folds, the pianist, producer, and evil genius behind William Shatner's 2004 record, Has-Been. Dan Ozzie, the editor at Noisy.com, recently wrote about this record in a column called The Album That Broke Indie Rock for Good. And he joins me to talk about it. Dan Ozzie, welcome to Soundcheck.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So why this album, and why now?
Well, good question. We live in, like, the age of nostalgia, where everybody likes to look back on how much better things used to be. And So 2014, you know, we're just seeing, like, this crazy barrage of it, because 2004, when you look back, was such a monumental year, kind of for music and film and a lot of, like, indie culture, and there was just so much that came out in 2004.
Right.
You know,
including this bizarro record William Shatner. So why
well,
focus?
That's the thing, because I wanted to take on an album. Clearly, everybody's going to be writing about 10-year anniversary of Arcade Fire Funeral and Killer's Hot Fuss and all these albums that came out 10 years ago. I was like, what's the stupidest album that I bought 10 years ago that we can unearth? And yeah, obviously I had to go with William Shatner's Has-Been.
So you bought it?
I bought it. Yeah, I still own it on CD.
Okay.
I'm like one of the last few people who own CDs.
Were you a William Shatner fan?
No,
were you a Star
I wasn't.
Trek fan?
No, neither. I guess I remember distinctly walking into Virgin Megastore in Times Square, which is not even there anymore.
Right.
And they had this wall of bestsellers that were all things they were pushing for that year. They had, it was like around Christmas time, so it was like a 2-for-1 sale. Mm-hmm. And they had Morrissey's You Are the Quarry and Interpol Antics and The Streets and all these albums. And like marketed alongside them was this William Shatner album, this weird artsy looking William Shatner album just thrown in with the rest of them. And it had all these names on the front, Ben Folds and Henry Rollins and Amy Mann. And I was like, yeah, okay. I'm getting one free with my purchase of The Streets and Arcade Fire. Sure, whatever. I'll get this album.
Well, I mean, if you were interested in the wordplay of The Streets, you got a very different sort of wordplay
right,
here
yeah.
from William Shatner. Now, not the first time he collaborated with Ben Folds, but we can talk about that in a moment. I want to play Common People. They're cover of the Jarvis Cocker, the Pulp song.
So probably what most people remember of this album. The only thing that most people remember of this album.
Is this a good cover?
It's actually pretty good.
Yeah. Okay.
Because cool. I think it's the type of thing that everybody was going to be like, oh, God. And then it came out and everybody's like, all right, well, that was pretty good.
This is Common People, probably the best known album, probably the best known track on the William Shatner album called Has Been.
She came from Greece. She had a thirst for knowledge. She studied sculpture at St. Martin's College. That's where I caught her eye. She told me that her dad was loaded. I said, in that case, I'll have a rum and Coca-Cola. She said, fine. And in 30 seconds' time, she said, I want to live like common people. I want to do whatever common people do. I want to sleep with common people. I want to sleep with common people like you. Well, what else could I do? I said, I'll see what I can do. I took her to a supermarket. I don't know why, but I had to start it somewhere. So it started there. I said, pretend you've got no money. She just laughed and said, oh, you're so funny. I said, yeah? Well, I can't see anyone else smiling in here. Are you sure? You want to live like common people? You want to see whatever common people see? You want to sleep with common people? You want to sleep with common people like me? But she didn't understand.
She just smiled and held my hand. Rent a flat above a shop. Cut your hair and get a job. Smoke some flags and play some pool. Pretend you never went to school. But still you'll never get it right.
It might be the mark of a great song when it could be covered by someone who is not musical at all
yeah.
and still be great.
Well, it's funny because Shatner didn't at all try to sing or perform it. Well, I guess he performed it, but he did it in his very Shatner-esque way of
right.
talking, you know?
And worth pointing out that in the chorus there, that's obviously not William Shatner
no.
singing.
No.
That is, in fact, Joe Jackson, famous for Is She Really Going Out With Him and songs like that. Did you know the first time that Ben Folds and William Shatner collaborated? The Fear of Pop album.
Oh, I didn't even know
yeah,
about that.
Yeah, they did something back in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
and it was really funny.
Yeah.
You know, where Shatner does this kind of goofy thing on how, you know, you got into every bit of new age self-help, you know, and he's just like dripping with sarcasm. It's very,
it's
very funny. So Ben Folds clearly is a William Shatner fan.
Well, yeah. It's funny because I just read recently that they, when they came together to make this album, you know, they were very collaborative on it. And then that particular song, William Shatner had never heard.
Mm.
And Ben Folds was like, hey, I found a song that you have to cover. And Shatner was like, oh, are you sure about that? And no, he's like, trust me. And I guess Ben must have picked it because he knows Shatner's range as a singer is non-existent. So he's like, here's a song that is pretty much spoken anyway that you
right.
can perform, you know?
For months on end, I maintain a veneer of sincere interest, as if I were listening as you relived
every page of self-help and new age that you'd read. And
I went into the guild.
I'd read the same books. I learned to ape the motions of a sensitive human being, and we were all so happy. But you found things to fix, and I knew it was time to move on.
Well, what about, you know, I mean, Shatner has a track record here. You know, that thing he did back in the late 60s.
The Transformed Man, yeah.
Yeah.
But that was funny because a lot of that was related to his Star Trek career, you know, or like his personality as Captain Kirk.
Right.
But this was like William Shatner, the has-been, basically, as the album title suggests, the former over-the-hill actor.
So a little more aware, more...
Self-referential,
yeah. Whereas that early record was just like a blatant attempt to, hey, this guy's a big star right now, let's stick him in a studio
and make
like a psychedelic hooey thing.
It would be like if we took, you know, The Rock now and gave him an album.
Oh, please.
We should start making albums with The Rock. I just want to go on record. I was the first person to say that.
Well, you know, William Shatner's recording of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds sort of regularly makes people's list of the greatest worst songs of all time.
Right, right.
So, for you, Dan, here's a little bit of that.
Sure.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you. Answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Cellophane flowers of yellow and green towering over your head. Look for the girl with a sun in her eyes. And she's gone!
That is some vintage William Shatner goodness.
Yeah, and that was really... It's funny because I just read an interview with Shatner from years ago when he talked about Has-Been, and I think the difference between Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds and the Common People cover was when they were making this record, he asked Ben Folds, like, I don't know how I should make this album, and Ben Folds was basically like, be honest, like, be yourself. And so I think that's the difference between Lucy in the Sky and Common People. He dropped this sort of pretension about maybe I could have a musical career. It's just like Common People and Has-Been is just very much like, I have no business being in this studio, but like, let's see what comes out anyway.
We're speaking with Dan Ozzie, editor at Noisy with an E, noisy.com, talking about his recent column, William Shatner's Has-Been, the album that broke indie rock for good. So it's a 2004 release.
Mm-hmm.
2004 is an incredible year,
it
as you alluded
really
to before, for
back,
indie
yeah.
rock.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just part of the list of major indie rock records that came out that year. Funeral by Arcade Fire.
Alexander, our older brother, set out for a great adventure.
Good News for People Who Love Bad News by Modest Mouse. Franz Ferdinand's self-titled debut album. The Walkmen, Bows and Arrows. Interpol's Antics.
It took a lifespan, but no cellmate. A long way back. Sandy, why can't we look the other way?
These are great
yeah.
indie rock.
And so many bands that broke out, too, like Rilo Kiley's More Adventurous and, you know, The Killers and all these albums that broke out. And that's what I kind of wrote the article about when I was writing it. And looking back, it's like, oh, what a goofy album. But looking back, it was such an interesting year because all of these albums came out, and it was actually, 2004 was actually the first year in a while that CD sales jumped. Mm. They sold, I think, 653 million units, which was up from about 635 from the previous year. And it was sort of this last false glimmer of hope for the CD because that number never rose again. Over the next 10 years, it just dwindled down until last year. I think it was something like 150 million CDs were sold.
So your contention is that this William Shatner record was kind of riding the crest of a wave, and if it had been a year later, it probably would not have been made.
I think so, because we just got sucked into this indie hubris of like, yeah, let's treat all these. If you look at Has-Been, it got a 7.5 on Pitchfork that year. That was more than they gave Wilco's A Ghost Is Born. That was more than they gave Ryle O'Kiley's More Adventurous that year. And that's insane for what looked, when looking back, is a novelty album. But it got like it got swooped in with the rest of this like indie mania that it got taken seriously as an album.
Well, because Ben Folds is a serious artist. I mean,
sure,
he knows how to have fun.
It did not hurt to have his name on the record, I'll say.
Plus
that.
You had, you know, Joe Jackson and Amy Mann and all these other known quantities in the rock world. Now, there's this song called That's Me Trying that you write about in the article. This is a co-composition by Shatner and Folds, right?
Yeah, and it's probably, I would say, everybody knows the Common People cover, but, like, if you want to give this record a shot, I would say start with this song, because some of the album is kind of goofy, and his textbook Shatner lounge talking at things. But this is a really brilliant song, and it was actually written by Nick Hornby, who wrote About a Boy and High Fidelity.
Right. And who has worked with Ben Folds on a couple of
occasions, I think so.
Now.
So this was a song that he had written about in the voice of like a deadbeat dad trying to rekindle his relationship with his adult daughter. And Ben Folds and Amy Mann do the chorus. And it's actually really a beautiful song.
Let's listen to a little bit of That's Me Trying from William Shatner's album with Ben Folds et al., the album called Has-Been.
I got your address from the phone book in the library. Wandered in, looked you up, and you were there. Weird that you've been living maybe 2 miles away for the best part of 20 years. You must be what, in your early 40s now? If I remember, you were born in June. Or was it May? Eisenhower was the president, although it may have been JFK.
Years of silence, not enough.
You still working in that store in Ventura? You still going with... No, that's not fair. I know I haven't been the very best of dads. I'll hold my hand up there. The reason that I'm writing is I'd like for us to meet. Get a little daughter-dad action going soon. We could put things behind us, eat some pizza, drink some beer. You still see your sister, Lemley? Bring her to...
Here's a silence.
That's Me Trying from the William Shatner album called Has-Been, featuring Ben Folds and text there by the English novelist and writer and columnist Nick Hornby. Dan Ozzie, editor of Noisy.com, with us talking about this 2004 release, an eccentric release in what was a banner year for indie rock. Nick Hornby providing some really touching lyrics there. Ben Folds and Amy Mann contribute backing vocals. But elsewhere on the record, we do get this, you know, Shatner does the words, Ben Folds does the music kind of combo. And is that where things begin to fall apart? Or to devolve into mere novelty?
I guess it's just kind of like any pop album where you've got some gems and then you got a whole lot of filler,
right.
You know? And there is a lot of filler on that, but... In between, there's this kind of like sparks of genius.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in which category does I Can't Get Behind That fall?
Somewhere in the middle.
That's not what you said in your article.
Well, I mean, the concept is pretty funny. It's a pretty interesting concept. It's William Shatner and Henry Rollins sort of trading
of Black Flag
and Rollins bands and every movie you've seen where there's a cop that he's playing the cop usually. But it's those two sort of trading off things that they have gripes with. And it's an interesting concept, and they do it over this scatty jazz beat, but then the result is it kind of just sounds like two old men complaining about things. It kind of sounds like this Andy Rooney-esque, like, you know what really grinds my gears?
Let's hear a little bit of I Can't Get Behind That, William Shatner with Henry Rollins.
My favorite shows on TV have 12 minutes of advertising.
I can't get behind that kind of time.
Eat quickly, drive faster, make more money now. I can't get behind that.
My kids say, he said to me, and I'm like, and he's like, and she's like.
It's all he's all, she's all.
I can't get behind that kind of, like, English.
That'll be 6 to 8 weeks before delivery.
The rising oceans, the warming temperatures.
The dying polar bears, no tigers in 50 years.
Rising poison in the air and water.
I can't understand why the price of gas suddenly rises when oil goes up.
But takes months to go down long after oil falls.
I can't get behind any of that.
I can't get behind the gods, who are more vengeful, angry, and dangerous if you don't believe in them.
Why can't all these gods just get along? I mean, they're omnipotent and omnipresent. What's the problem?
What's the problem? What about the men who say, do as I do? Believe in what I say for your own good, or I'll kill you! I can't get behind that!
I can't get behind that!
Everyone... Oh, my.
I was just doing the math in my head while that was playing, and at the time, Rollins was 53... and Shatner was 73. So yeah, you've kind of got these two grown men just complaining about things over a song. But it's an interesting idea.
I guess. I wonder what Henry Rollins thinks of it now.
Well, he mentioned it in his, he does like his sort of spoken word tours.
Right.
And he talked about it. And it was actually kind of funny because I think he has a sense of humor about the ridiculousness of it. But he was just like, I came into the studio and William Shatner was like, Henry, you have to hear this song, this idea. and so then he asked him like to do a song like that. And then I think Henry was like, well, I have things that I also don't like. Maybe I could write some of my own. And they kind of collaborated and came up with this song.
So they Frankensteined their dislikes together and came up with this little monster.
That's what you got, I guess.
All right. Dan Ozzie is editor at Noisy.com, and we're talking about his recent column, William Shatner's Has Been, the album that broke indie rock for good. Came out 10 years ago, a great year in indie rock, and Well, I was going to say it's the dolphin swept up in the tuna net, but this is kind of the chum.
It was a stowaway on the ship, for sure, yeah.
But now, you have poked fun at anniversary celebrations, nostalgia, reissue stuff, all this. And here you are engaging in it yourself.
Well, that's the thing, because I was like, you know, as a music writer, I feel like everybody wants to be the first one to write about, oh my gosh, remember how great Arcade Fire's Funeral was, or The Killer's Hot Fuss, like, what a monumental album. I, like, looked at my CD collection, which I still have, and I was like, what's the dumbest CD that I can look back on that nobody's going to care about? And that's what I did. I took this, like, forgotten record, and then in looking back on it, because I genuinely haven't listened to it in 10 years, I was just like, wow, this was such a product of its time, of the culture of its time, you know? Such a weird record.
So you had a little twinge of nostalgia, and you had to head over to the keyboard and
But I tried to do it in an ironic way, because this album is sort of an ironic, in that Pitchfork review of it that I mentioned where it got at 7.5, I think they called Shatner something like the king of generation irony or something like that. So doesn't this album certainly deserve a look back too?
But other than that, you look back at 2004 and you think, God, I really ought to write about that Interpol record or whatever.
No, because I was like, oh, those albums meant a lot to a lot of people. What's the album that meant something to like 12
people?
To
you
people?
And you alone. Yeah. Okay. The article is William Shatner's Has Been, the album that broke indie rock for good. Dan Ozzie, editor at Noisy.com. Good to see you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Has Been.
You talking to me? You talking to me? You calling me has been?
What'd you say your name is?
Jack.
Never done Jack.
Glad to meet you. Who's your friend?
Dick. Don't say Dick.
What do you know? And you, friend, what's your handle?
Don. Two thumbs down.
Up next, keyboardist and circuit bender Marco Benevento joins us to play songs from his new album, and later, a brief history of an unbelievable number one hit. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Here at the show, we're all fans of keyboardist and composer Marco Benevento. We like the deep rockin' grooves that he builds a lot of his improvisations on. We like how unpredictable he is, playing an acoustic piano rendition of an old Pink Floyd tune 1 minute, and then turning out a squall of noise from circuit bent toys the next. And we kind of like his song Eagle Rock, which serves as Soundcheck's longtime theme music. But on his new album, Marco has a further surprise up his sleeve. He sings. The album's called Swift, and the Marco Benevento Trio is here to play some of it on Soundcheck today, beginning actually with my favorite track off the new album. It's called Witches of Ulster.
Thank you.
That is the Marco Benevento Trio live on Soundcheck with the song Witches of Ulster from Marco's new record called Swift, and featuring Marco Benevento singing and playing, I'll say, piano, but there's a story there. Dave Drywitz on bass and Andrew Borger behind our drum kit. Marco, good to see you again. Welcome
Hello.
Back to Soundcheck.
Good to be back. Nice to see you.
Witches of Ulster. What is, I mean, is that a Halloween song? Are there genuinely witches in Ulster County upstate? What is that?
It started as, just a jam, just a bunch of, sort of string of chords. And I would just sort of make up words along the way. And actually, at first, it was Witches of Austin. And my cousin lives in Austin. But we don't really play there that much. And I was thinking I should make it maybe a little bit more personal or something.
Yeah.
And Ulster came up because I moved to Woodstock about 3 years ago. And so it changed to Ulster. And yes, there definitely are witches in Ulster. It's a strange place.
but everyone's talking about how this album is sort of your vocal debut, but you've been singing in the live shows recently.
Yeah, which is why I kind of decided to step it up and try it myself. It was nice to hear my songs with vocals on the previous record.
Right, you had guest vocals.
Yeah, Cal from Rubble Bucket sang on a couple of them. But, at first, before she got on them, my wife and I and our friends actually sang the words that we wrote first, and then we decided to have Cal do it. But so I really wanted to have that element of vocals, and I was going to call Cal again and have her do it again. And I do remember sitting in my studio thinking that and just thinking, you know what, dude, you have to do this yourself now. You've been doing it a little with, side projects here and there.
Right.
And just try to find some keys that the songs work,
Plus, Cal sings in Rubble Boy. I mean, they have
their
own tours and stuff. She's not going to leave her band to come tour with you.
No, and sometimes, quite honestly, when
we're... No offense.
Right, no. Totally. And when we're playing those songs, sometimes, we miss the vocals.
Yeah.
We trigger some of her vocals live on The Limbs of a Pine, another song. But for This Is How It Goes, we just played instrumental. But you missed that, element. And honestly, our show is still like 50-50,
right.
Instrumentals and half vocals. But,
but now the other thing is it's you don't just decide to sing and start singing. You've changed the songwriting process. You've got to write lyrics.
I know. And I'm glad that I opened up that door. I like it a lot. And now I pay attention more to words. I mean, I never really did. It's kind of crazy to admit that as a musician.
They're coming out of your mouth all the time. You might want to start paying attention.
That's very true. And writing them down and sort of getting creative with that process has really been fun, to try to find words that rhyme together or just words like the syllables that you need. You need a four-syllable word for this part,
right.
Or
something like Witches of Ulster.
Right.
I see witches on the streets of Ulster. That's a very evocative phrase, even if it doesn't have a very specific meaning.
Right, and it's interesting, and I'm talking more to musicians about their process of writing lyrics, too. Some are more the poetry type where they want to just sort of come up with words and write their story.
Mm-hmm.
And then, others are kind of like how I'm doing it, which is more the syllable singing kind of type. And,
right.
But it's a cool process. I actually spoke to Alex from Rubble Bucket about this songwriting, the lyric process, and he was meeting with guys in L.A. for their new record. They were going to do 3 days of lyric writing powwow in L.A. And my first reaction was, "Wow, that seems like a waste of time."
The writing of lyrics by committee or writing lyrics without music? Which?
No, writing lyrics with other people for 3 days. I was sort of like, why do you want to do that? Just do it at your house and, by yourself, right? And that's kind of more of a social thing, I feel like, to show your words to people and let them know what what they think about your words. And so by the end of that conversation, I thought that was a great idea, which is what I eventually did. I called up Aaron Freeman from Ween, and I had him come over and listen to all the demos that I had of the songs, and he just gave me some advice.
Nice.
So that was cool. It's a nice new instrument. for
right,
me.
Right,
so, yeah.
Now, speaking of instruments, what is this contraption you've lugged in? I mean, we have a perfectly fine Steinway piano
here. You have
here,
a beautiful Steinway piano in here.
But you have brought in this, like, rinky-dink upright thing with all kinds of blinking lights and a laptop on. What is this?
Well, look, luckily she didn't hear you, so no. this is a $100 Craigslist purchase. It's a 64-note piano. They made these pianos in the 20s for train cars and for bars.
Huh.
Since then, I've collected about six of them. And they're hard to find. Some people don't even list them as small pianos or 64-note key pianos on Craigslist, so you have to look at the pictures. You know what happened really was we were playing like more jazz rooms because they have pianos in them.
Yeah.
But our music was sort of experimental and changing and had more of a dance mm-hmm. vibe about it. So I was thinking like I'd rather play other rooms like the Bowery Ballroom or, you know, more rock rooms.
Right.
But generally they don't have pianos. So I basically was like, I need to find a small piano. And I played at Largo many years back in California, in L.A., and in the back room there was a small piano, and it was the first time I'd ever seen a piano. And, you know, John Bryan keeps a lot of gear there. And
John Bryan, the composer, yeah, film music producer, et cetera,
right,
et cetera.
And I just fell in love with the look of it and the size of it and thought, well, that could fit in my van.
Mm.
I don't have to play jazz rooms or I don't have to play any kind of specific room. I could play anybody's house or wherever, whenever I want to with this thing. So
you can even move it into a room where there is, in fact, a piano, as you've done here today. We're speaking with Marco Benevento. His new album is called Swift. And he's here with the trio. The single from the album is At the Show. You want to do that for us?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Let's hear another live performance. Marco is heading out on tour to support this new record, Swift. And when he swings back into New York, he'll be at Brooklyn Bowl on December 18th and 19th. So mark your calendars. Here he is with the rest of the trio to do the single from the new record. This is called At the Show.
All right.
That is Marco Benevento and the trio live on Soundcheck. Marco playing his small piano with its various little black boxes and stuff. And Dave Drywitz playing the electric bass. Andrew Borger playing the drums. The song At the Show is the single from the new Marco Benevento record called Swift. It's been great having you back here on Soundcheck, where we hear your music every day. thanks to your song Eagle Rock, which serves, as I mentioned before, as our ongoing theme music. Great to see you. Thanks for bringing the band in.
Nice to see you too, John. Thank you for having us, and thank you for letting me bring this nice piano.
Yeah. Up next, it's another head-scratching installment of our series, That Was a Hit, about a song that went to number one on the Billboard Hot 100 for one very embarrassing week in 1976. Stay tuned to hear the song next on Soundcheck.
And now, Soundcheck looks back at the pop charts of yesteryear and asks,
That was a hit?
Everybody was kung fu.
They're coming to take me away, haha.
Time for another installment of That Was a Hit, our occasional series about songs that have unexpectedly made their way to the top of the charts. Not too long ago, we spoke with Memphis music historian Robert Gordon about his book, Respect Yourself, Stax Records and the Soul Explosion. But there is a postscript to the Stax Records history that we just had to follow up on. And it involves a disco dancing duck. Now, to understand where this song came from, if such a thing is even possible, let's talk with Robert Gordon once again. Robert, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm smiling from that song, I got to tell you.
Now, I mentioned this is kind of a postscript to the history, the storied history of Stax Records. Tell me about Estelle Axton, the axe in Stax Records, and how she's involved in this.
Estelle had co-founded Stax with her brother Jim, Stewart and Axton, and they had something of a little bit of a rivalry between them, to where Estelle could hear these kind of unusual hits and would push for them to be released. For example, the Marquis' Last Night, one of the great instrumental soul songs of the era, no one was paying any attention to, but Estelle insisted that it was a hit. And sure enough, it was a huge hit. So she had a knack for sussing out what could be popular. And she always attributed it to her life as a sales clerk in her own record store.
So, but even with that vaunted track record, what did she hear in Disco Duck that made her think, oh, I can make a hit out of this?
Well, she gets bought out of Stax in 1969. And has to stay out of the record business, both retail and production, for 5 years.
Right, so she has a non-competition clause in her buyout.
For 5 years, from 1969. So in 1974, she starts a new company, Freetone, and she's recording some country music. She's recording novelty songs. For some reason, she'd gotten onto this kick with animals. I forget the sequence of events, but there's Frumpy the toad or something. She was just trying anything. And there was this popular DJ in town named Rick Dees. Rick Dees
in Memphis.
So funny. In Memphis, yeah. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid growing up in Memphis, Rick D. So let's see, this song is 75. So Rick D's probably went on the air in like 72 or so. And I would have been 11. And Rick D's was so funny in the morning that we would wake up early for school to hear more Rick D's. He got the mayor, who had this very deep Southern accent, to record four words for him. The mayor said, well, he said, "Yes, sir, Mr. D's." And he said, "No, sir, Mr. D's." And it was this thing that just, a madness that took over this city where people would be answering each other. You know, my dad would tune into Rick D's. It was so funny. And at the dinner table, when someone wanted to say something, they would say, "No, sir, Mr. D's." It just, you know.
But then yeah. He writes Disco Duck.
All I can think of here is to say that Disco Duck is the Vanilla Ice of disco. You know, I don't know how else to explain it. I mean,
so it was
why
meant,
did it be?
It was meant as parody, is what you're saying.
Well,
no, was it serious?
I mean, yeah,
was,
I mean,
it sincere.
Well, here's the thing: I wasn't there. I don't know. I can tell you this: you know, you listen to that bit you played a few minutes ago. You hear those strings swelling and that, you know, sort of classic disco. It actually evokes Soul Train, you know, fashion. It's really fun. It is weird as hell that there's a duck, you know, quacking in the middle of things, but in a way, you know, this was the era of Disco Sucks and all that.
Right.
Now, granted, hearing this song, it's hard to argue. You know, I'm not sure which side this is falling on. And I just think it became popular because, one, it makes you smile. And two, it was a way to, because it makes you smile, because it's, you know, a parody, because it's funny, it was a way to enjoy disco, even if you hated disco.
And that is how a disco song with a talking duck hit number one, people, on the Billboard Hot 100 in 1976.
Went to a party the other night. All the ladies were treating me right. Moving my feet to the disco beat. How in the world could I keep my seat?
Number one on the Billboard Hot 100 in 1976, Rick Dees and his cast of idiots with Disco Duck. Yes, folks, that was a hit. Robert Gordon, the Grammy-winning Memphis music historian, explaining how that happened to us. It even made an appearance on Saturday Night Fever. So, you know, this was a big deal. Robert, what happened to Rick Dees after that?
Fame took its toll, maybe. Rick was on the second most popular radio station in town here in Memphis. He was the Avis. And and when he made a reference to his own song, they booted him off the air, and he was quickly picked up by the other, you know, the most popular teen pop radio station in town. And ultimately, he went out to Hollywood.
Hosted Solid Gold.
Hosted Solid Gold, had a talk show. I want to make one more Rick D's note about the Disco Duck album, because I know you got it in your collection, John. And go
didn't
back
even know
to the,
there was an album.
Go back to the first track on the album. Don't tell me that, John. I don't believe you. The first song was about Elvis, and it was the other really funny song on the album, not Disco Gorilla, by the way. This song was about Elvis, and it was called "I Ate Too Many Jelly Donuts."
So he did a whole album, and there was one other funny song on it, is what you're saying. I caught the subtext there. Now, Robert, as a Memphian, does it hurt that Disco Duck is one of the most successful records ever to come from your hometown?
I think it defines us as truly left field. And I'm happy about that. Pleased and proud. As Rufus would say, plum, pleasing, pleasure.
Rufus being Rufus Thomas?
Rufus Thomas.
The great Stax Records singer. And Robert Gordon is the author of Respect Yourself, Stax Records and the Soul Explosion. Robert, good to talk to you again.
All right, John, thanks so much for having me on.
Next time on Soundcheck, Mark Mothersbaugh is one of the founding members of the band Devo. But Devo is just one small part of a decades-long exploration of what Mothersbaugh considers a kind of cultural de-evolution, hence Devo. Mothersbaugh's many different visual depictions of this de-evolution are the subjects of a new book called Mark Mothersbaugh, Myopia. We'll talk with him all about it. Plus, hear live music from Mike Hadrius, a.k.a. Perfume Genius. His newest album, Too Bright, is an electronically textured telling of some painfully personal stories. We'll talk with him about the bullying and homophobia that inspired some of the album's songs, and he and his band will play live. That's Monday. Meantime, have a great weekend and join us then. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.